Welcome to the Future of Supply Chain. Each episode, we bring together leaders across the supply chain space to discuss the role of technology and business model innovation on the future of supply chain. The Future of Supply Chain podcast is presented by Dynamo. Dynamo is a pre-seed and seed stage supply chain investor. To learn more about Dynamo and this show, head over to www.dynamo.vc/podcasts or subscribe on the platform of your choice. Now let's get into the show. Here's our host, Santosh Sankar.
Hey, ladies and gents, welcome back to the Future Supply Chain Podcast. I'm your host, Santosh Sankar. And joining me today is Stanton Thomas, SVP of Sustainability at O9 Solutions. Welcome, Stanton.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks.
Well, it's great to have you here. And, you know, to kick things off, I'd love to just do a quick 90 seconds on what O9 is building, is doing, is servicing its customers in and around, just to level set some of the base knowledge amongst our listeners.
Sure. First a little bit of background on O9. O9 was founded in 2009 by two of the pioneers in a space that's now known as advanced planning systems. That was Sanjeev Sidhu and Chakri Gautamakula. And the company's headquartered in Dallas, Texas. We employ 2,400 employees located in offices all over the world. Company provides a cloud native technology platform called the Digital Brain. And that really represents a very comprehensive set of digital transformation tools specifically aimed at enterprise planning and decision support. And on top of that platform, we have developed a number of SaaS-based applications that address a number of different planning needs, including supply chain, which is essentially the core, but we also do financial planning, revenue management, commercial planning, and most recently, planning around sustainable supply chain. Over the past 5 years, we've experienced very rapid growth, and our client base now represents some of the largest and most well-known companies in the world across a broad range of industry sectors, including retail, consumer goods, telecom, manufacturing, et cetera.
And what's the Stanton Thomas story? How did you get into the world of supply chain sustainability?
Well, long background in supply chain. So I have over 30 years of experience in manufacturing and supply chain. Started out my career doing advanced robotic automation systems in the automotive sector, and then kind of moved into this advanced planning system space. But by about 2000, I became very much aware of how drastically our climate was changing. And I felt very strongly that really needed to be a critical focus, and that focus would be essentially decarbonizing industry. So, you know, I made the transition to clean tech, and clean tech, you know, inevitably intersects with kind of a broader domain of sustainable development. And, you know, from that, what does that mean in the context of supply chain? Well, it really means essentially kind of transitioning supply chains. You know, obviously efficiency plays a big factor in sustainability, but ultimately it means transitioning industrial supply chains away from fossil fuel-based energy sources, and essentially rethinking how we design our products, you know, in such a way that we want to maximize reuse, recoverability of materials, and increase the use of more natural, renewable materials in the process. And ultimately, supply chains really need to address the impacts they have within the communities they operate. In my view, this intersection of sustainability and supply chain is only going to grow in the future. And I think that that's really where the focus needs to be going forward.
Yeah, I think we're certainly seeing, as we interact with a kind of various corporate C-suites related decision makers, there is an increased focal on, hey, does this support a sustainability goal that we have? And as much as I do need to ensure operationally things move on time and full on cost, all that good stuff, if I can make a decision that is better for my environment and broader societal welfare, I'm going to do that. So definitely agree around that sentiment. But kind of moving forward here, you mentioned the 09 digital brain, and I'd love to kind of break it down, right? Kind of how does it work and what situations is it best used in?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the design objective of the digital brain is to enable companies to effectively manage two things, variability and complexity in modern supply chains. And, you know, fundamentally, the idea of visibility is an essential element in this. So essentially what we've done at the core of the digital brain is a modeling construct that we call the enterprise knowledge graph. And what this technology enables you to do is essentially enables large companies with large and complex supply chains to create what's called a digital twin of the physical supply chain. And then what we do is we embody that model with the practical constraints and the operational efficiencies of things like production resources, equipment, processes, as well as, you know, not only your own operations, but as well as those of your suppliers and service providers. And the other aspect of this technology is that, you know, no two industries are really the same. And so the modeling construct has to be able to capture the unique characteristics and nuances of each industry sector. And so, you know, as an example, a process heavy industry like steel manufacturing is going to be modeled very differently than a real retail and distribution industry, that type of thing. And so if, you know, so once you've actually kind of gotten that, those, that model in place, this digital twin in place, then you can employ things like mathematical solvers and other tools such as AI and machine learning to create plans and scenarios that effectively optimize around the real constraints of your supply chain. And if you look at our client base, you know, you're going to find companies representing a diverse set of industries. I think we're roughly around 16 different industry sectors right now that we work with. And all of them are using this platform to model and manage the efficiency of their supply chain in a similar way.
And, you know, the concept of data silos, I've noticed, is important as 09 is presented and discussed. And you use certain language there just in this prior segment around how you bring kind of not just internal, but your customers, your suppliers together as well. So I'd be curious, how does the platform reduce kind of the drawbacks around supply chain data and how it's currently managed?
Yeah, that's an important question. It's a really essential theme. So if you look at systems topologies, you know, in most large companies today, what you're going to find is fragmented and siloed data scattered across kind of a diverse systems landscape. And there's a lot of reasons why enterprises kind of evolve in this way. But the end result is that knowledge tends to be managed tribally among, you know, various business units and business functions within the enterprise. One of the curious things that we see in companies is reverting back to spreadsheets, even after they've made substantial investments in commercial software. And this is really done in an attempt to regain some level of visibility in order to make, you know, coherent business decisions. But in that kind of environment, there's really no single version of truth with respect to either the business that they're operating or the market in which they're operating. And I think that it, you know, it's clear that business decisions that are made on incomplete picture of reality is, you know, they're going to have a higher error rate. So what 09 essentially does is it connects all key functions within the business to kind of a single harmonized source of enterprise data. And we also incorporate kind of real-time market data into that picture through what we call our knowledge hub data services. So you're not only getting an operational picture of what's going on within your supply chain, but you're also connected deeply to market data in terms of economic indicators and other types of events going on in the in the marketplace. How do we do this? How do we create the single picture? Well, in the onboarding process, we essentially, you know, acquire the data, we validate the data, we cleanse it, and we bring it into a single harmonized, coherent version of truth for the organization. And in that process, you know, we can apply tools like artificial intelligence to automate and streamline the process of data management, essentially evaluating the data on the inbound, harmonizing it with your kind of enterprise level catalog data, you know, a dictionary, if you will. And then we can also use machine learning type of tools to ensure that in that process, there's a continuous process of improvement in both the quality and the accuracy of data over time.
And, you know, kind of bringing it back to sustainability, could you kind of describe O9 through that lens, the solutions that people are able to engineer off of the digital brain?
Right. So, you know, backing up a little bit of background on that. So in 2021, we made a strategic pivot towards becoming, you know, kind of an agent of sustainable supply chain transformation for our clients. And the reason why we did that is we believe that supply chains are a major source of environmental and social impact globally. And if you look at, you know, studies by McKinsey and many others, I think that there's plenty of support for that assertion. And, you know, we also understand as an important concept that supply chain management and sustainability transformation aren't really two separate things. They're in fact integral components of a common process. And we're beginning to see in our client base kind of a merging of these two disciplines. And within that context, we think a foundational idea is that the transformation of your supply chain to a sustainable operating model really should be done from the same platform you use to optimize the performance of your supply chain. And so to support our clients in that journey, we have essentially built a very broad spectrum of sustainability metrics and KPIs into our core supply chain modeling framework. That integrated framework allows clients to essentially balance conventional supply chain KPIs like cost and service level efficiencies with sustainability objectives such as reducing carbon. And ultimately, our objective is to facilitate the transition from sustainability as a compliance reporting exercise to a forward planning and optimization process that allows clients to essentially achieve their combined business and sustainability goals. Now, what does that mean from the standpoint of specific solutions? So we have created new capabilities for our clients around enterprise level and product level carbon management and enterprise footprinting in terms of environmental attributes. And we've also built a number of use cases around multi-tier supply chain visibility and ESG risk management. That is, what's happening outside of the boundaries of your organization and in what's called the world of scope 3. And to be able to identify the risks and the opportunities that exist there. And then within our core planning applications, things like supply planning, demand plan, integrated business planning, and many other planning applications that we have, we've essentially integrated key sustainability metrics and KPIs and analytics into that process. And another area is circularity. I think that this is going to be a ever-increasing issue of importance. And we have a number of workflows that essentially facilitate the reverse logistics flows of post-consumer materials back into the process to reduce the need for primary inputs and thus reduce the embodied carbon of the output product. So that's kind of a high-level overview. There's a lot more there, but I'll leave it at that.
And a lot of the enablement you mentioned is reliant on kind of requisite data, presumably being integrated into the digital brain. Are there certain kind of standard data sets or integrations one needs that can deliver against sustainability
Yeah. Another great question. So, you know, we've talked about this digital twin concept. So what you want to do is embody that digital twin with sustainability attributes. So, you know, a broader spectrum of data is required than what you would normally expect in a standard supply chain implementation. So, you know, most of the modeling aspects remain the same. So you're still modeling your own operations, that of your suppliers, that of your customer retail outlets and your products and the materials you buy. You still model all that in the context of your digital twin. But now what you're doing is these models are extended to incorporate additional data attributes and dimensions that define the sustainability characteristics of those modeling elements. For example, you have modeled your suppliers. Well, now you include ESG performance metrics around the suppliers so that you can consider those KPIs in your material sourcing decisions or sourcing of productive capacities to those suppliers. So it becomes a part of the balancing or KPI framework in which you use to optimize your supply chain. Similarly, things like products that you define are extended to incorporate greater detail in terms of their environmental impact. Typically, this data comes from things like product lifecycle analysis, where you're looking at the environmental impact categories throughout the lifecycle of the product. Well, those things can now become a part of the supply chain model and utilized in forward planning and forward projection. Every modeling element of the digital twin can be extended in that way. So the end result is that the value chain model represents not only the single source of truth for the operational aspects of your supply chain, but also the sustainable performance of that supply chain.
Is there a customer success story or case study you're able to share with us here to bring this all together?
Sure. I can speak about that in general terms. So over the past year, we have been focused on co-innovation with our existing client base. And, you know, for instance, clarity is a key theme for a number of our suppliers. So we have a number of clients that are using our applications to schedule the reverse flow of post-consumer materials, as well as, you know, recovered components from those things from end of life back into the supply chain in order to, again, reduce the environmental footprint and need for primary raw materials. So that's a key area that we're working in. We're also in circularity, we're working on, you know, use cases for taking new product designs and projecting their environmental impact forward and looking at how product design then influences your targets for, you know, achievement against targets for things like carbon emissions and those types of things. Other clients are interested in product footprinting in terms of the ability to acquire product footprint information, environmental footprint information, based on a higher contribution of primary measured data. What does that mean? In the steel industry, for instance, the ability to actually capture process and machine level emissions data and then allocate that to the product flowing through that, such that when you ship your product to your customer, it has essentially a certificate of impact with it, that is, has a precise carbon footprint associated with that particular delivered item. So these are, you know, areas in certain industries where they actually want to get to this level. I think that and other clients are looking at how to integrate this sustainability data at the site level, at the product level, into their forward planning processes. So as they're projecting forward their demand and supply plans and the balance of those two things, they're also tracking and measuring things like, you know, carbon emissions, water utilization, waste production targets with that forward planning aspect. This is all in process type of work that we're doing right now. And we hope that we'll be able to discuss more specifics about our customers in the coming year.
And, you know, the one thing that we are seeing is that the government plays a hand when it comes to sustainability broadly, right? And namely accelerating sustainable practices. I'd be curious your take, how you're perceiving this, how you might be observing this practicality actually unfolding.
Yeah, that's a very, you know, so if, in general, obviously government has an important role to play, but if, you know, if you look at what's happened since the 2015, you know, Paris Agreement relative to the commitments that have been made by governments across the world, you know, you basically see that those commitments have not been made. So it's clear they have not been met. So it's clear that more concrete action is needed on the part of governments. And from my standpoint, I see the need for a carrot and stick approach. So you can't just regulate your way to sustainability. Governments will need to provide industry with incentives as well. So what does that mean? Well, it means that, you know, on the one hand, governments can incentivize capital investment in the private sector by establishing favorable tax incentives. And kind of on the other side of it, they need to provide for the write down of carbon intensive assets, right? Because there's a lot of infrastructure out there that would essentially need to be replaced by cleaner forms of technology, particularly in the energy sector. And that has to be done in such a way that you don't give unfair advantage to high carbon or carbon intensive industries. The other thing that governments could consider is actually backstopping private investment in decarbonization programs to a limited extent. They can't obviously backstop the whole thing, but they can provide some level of support. On the other side, so let's talk about regulations. So regulations ultimately need to essentially increase, facilitate the adoption of consistent measurement and performance standards for enterprises and the products they sell. So, you know, we've seen some regulatory actions here in the U.S. We've seen them there's a lot going on in the EU, as you may know. And I think that the importance of those types of things, if one particular region like the EU adopts some significant legal and regulatory frameworks, then you'll influence everybody else who wants to sell into that sector. It's kind of like a GDPR, right? Where it becomes a license to operate. And so just one major economic zone making the move for substantial regulations, I think, is going to influence the whole game globally from an economic standpoint. And I think that's a key aspect, but I also think that beyond government, private industry and industries need to actually play a role themselves. So they have the opportunity to co-invest and co-innovate within the context of the overall supply chain. And I think that there's a number of initiatives out there, but there hasn't been, you know, even participation. And I think that fundamentally, major emissions reductions are not possible by individual companies acting alone. Collective action is needed at, you know, industry-wide to create systemic level change. And I think that it's a tough balance because culturally, it's a competitive environment. Global economics, global markets are competitive. But ultimately, there needs to be some level of cooperation to drive sustainability at an industry level. And there's some efforts, there's some models out there that are promising, but there needs to be greater participation. Otherwise, the whole effort is marginal.
Well, with that, to kind of wrap us up here, I'd be curious if you have a single piece of advice for companies trying to establish and execute against a sustainability program, what would it be?
Well, I think that, you know, it would be very simply expressed as, you know, take the first step and then just keep moving one foot in front of the other. I think that a lot of companies tend to get hung up on not having a good data availability, you know, the quality of that data, the completeness of it, particularly relative to scope 3 data, that data that exists outside of their organization. And they tend to, you know, the level of movement tends to be very, let's say, restricted because they feel like they have to get their data governance house in order. And I think the key advice there is you just need to get started. And what's happening is that there's a lot of industry initiatives where there's going to be harmonization of data exchange standards. and the quality of data is going to get better, and it's and the exchange of the data has become more fluid over time. You just need to get started and be able to be ready to participate in that. The other thing is that time is of the essence. If you look at the regulatory frameworks in Europe, you will see that they're, you know, looking at the 2026 timeframe, the 2027 timeframe in terms of individual member state adoption and formulation of their own laws, essentially kind of mirroring the recommendations by the European Commission, right? So, you know, we're talking about 3-4 years. Well, it really takes that amount of time to develop the skill sets and the process competencies to be able to deliver against those regulations, both at the enterprise level and at the product level. So the time to get started is really now in taking, you know, into building muscles that you need in order to participate in sustainable supply chain transformation at the levels that will be required by the regulatory frameworks, particularly in Europe.
Well, with that, Stanton, we appreciate you joining us here, sharing the 09 story, your story, and delving into kind of some of these practicalities around sustainability related to the 09 platform. So with that, once again, thank you. And we look forward to seeing 09's continued success through the course of the year.
Great, Santosh. I really appreciate being here and thank you for having me.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a 5-star review and tell us what you liked. And be sure to head over to podcast.dynamo.vc to keep up to date with our latest content or subscribe on the podcast platform of your choice. Until next time.